This episode of the Rock Solid Podcast is brought to you by U-Turn Audio. Brilliant sound starting at $199. Everyone deserves a remarkable listening experience, and you'll get it with U-Turn Audio. Check them out at uturnaudio.com.
Live from New York, it's Saturday Night!
NBC Saturday Night. Starring the not ready for primetime player, Lorraine Newman.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and my guest today is founding member of the Los Angeles comedy improvisational group, The Groundlings, and an original cast member of Saturday Night Live. Please welcome to the stage, Television Academy Hall of Fame inductee, Miss Lorraine Newman. Come on. With a cookie. You brought a cookie.
I know. It's the perks of...
Now, will you be eating said cookie as we speak?
Heck no. I'm a professional.
Of course. Listen, I'm going to adjust this because you got the high mic stand. We're going to take it down.
I'm going to turn my phone off because I'm a professional.
Okay. Now, I happen to glance at your phone real quick, and you have an actress as your screensaver.
My daughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know... Hannah Einbinder from Hacks? Yes, yeah. So this was going to be one of my questions, but since I saw that, now I have to go right to it.
Well, also, but the other screen, you know, that's the one before you put it.
Yes.
In. The other screen is my other kid.
Spike.
Spike, who's
there
Okay. also on an HBO show.
Oh, well, no, I don't know this. What show are they on?
Los Spookies, Fred Armisen's show.
Well, now I got to find that one, too.
Yeah.
All right.
Spike is the water nymph.
So... when you were going into show business, were your parents supportive of your choice?
My mother said to her four children, I don't care what you kids do as long as you don't go into show business. So my twin brother is a musician. My older sister, well, my sister is an Emmy Award winning comedy writer and musician.
Tracy.
Yeah, Tracy. Yes. My older brother was a lighting director. I was just telling somebody the other day, I think it was Billy West was talking about having seen this band that his friend recommended, and they were all drunk on stage and out of tune and bumping into each other, and Billy said, this band's terrible. It was Aerosmith. But, you know, my brother was lighting director at Gazzari's in the 60s.
Wow.
And he would come home and say stuff like, God, there's this really great band you've got to see. They're called The Doors. You know, that's what it was like to grow up in L.A.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So now, when your kids want to go into show business, you've been there, you know the struggles.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, my kids went to school with lots of movie stars' mm-hmm. kids.
Sure.
I could see from very early on that they had the aptitude for the work and they had a good work ethic. And I just said, read everything you can. Have a broad compendium mm-hmm. from which to draw. And that's what they did. I mean, they were both really great readers and hard workers. And Hannah actually was... she never did any kind of acting in high school. She was an all-star competitive cheerleader, you know, the kind you see on ESPN that they throw her in the air. And she got too tall to be the flyer. So when she went to college, she went there for broadcast journalism because she had a crush on Rachel Maddow. And she joined the improv team. And then Nicole Byer was going to do a stand-up set at the college. And she said, can someone open for me? And the balls on my kid.
Very, very,
you know,
much so.
Having never done stand-up in her life, she wrote a 10-minute set. and killed, you know, and then went through all of the steps that you're supposed to do, mm-hmm. you know, open mics. And, you know, what's great is that these kids curate their own shows. You know, it's like yeah. Hannah Einbinder Presents, you know,
right.
it's all these great comics. So that's what she did. And that's also Spike started, you know, doing stand-up at the Improv when they were 15.
I have seen Hannah do stand-up because after Hacks was on, I saw that she was coming to Vitello's.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I are like, we've got to go because we know Wendy Liebman,
yes.
who you also know. So we're like, we have to go. And we're in the front row. I think you were there that night.
It was
the most recent one. It was the night when the gentleman in the front row was on his phone.
Yes.
And just, I never understand that.
Yeah.
And even when she called him out, he just kept scrolling and looking.
Yeah.
And, but she's a natural performer. And on Hacks, it's just sometimes when there's someone new that you've never seen act before, sometimes you can see them acting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it. It's so
oh,
natural.
Thank
She's
you.
So good.
I appreciate
it. And now, again, I don't want to lean in on Hannah and not talk about Spike, but I will have to seek out their work now and check that out, too. But I just wanted to give your kids props, and I wanted to
thank
find
you.
Out how you felt about them going into show business.
Yeah, I'm okay with it because they really are good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of them are really talented.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we made it clear to them that, you know, there's a lot of luck involved.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, they understood that.
Let me ask you about this. You released May You Live in Interesting Times. That's your memoir.
Yes.
But you released it only as an audiobook.
You know, there's a very interesting story behind that. Not. It was, that was like the, you know, the design of Audible. They mm-hmm. don't do anything in print.
Right.
And I had written this book. I'd tried to write this book 10 times, and I thought, I'm just never going to get it done. And then I got an offer from Audible.
Okay.
So I knew I had to get my ass in gear, and I had all this material that I'd written to avoid writing the book that I was eventually able to put in the book. But I was sitting with a friend of mine who had edited an article I wrote for Esquire when I was still on SNL. I was saying, oh my God, I have all this material. I don't know how to put it together. And he said, well, I'll help you. You know, and so I could not, Paul Slansky, I could not have done it without him. He helped me, you know, do chronology and fact check and, you know, telling me, you don't need that. That's boring, you know. It was very valuable.
And honest.
Yeah.
But my thing is, in order to read the book, to record the audio, there is a manuscript. It's written
there
somewhere.
There is a manuscript, yes.
But we're never going to see it in written form.
Well, I had to negotiate that down from, I don't remember how many years, to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already been 2-3 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe in, if you can wait, 7 years. But, you know, it is a vocal performance.
It is. It is.
And, you know, writing for performance is different than writing for reading. So it is written for performance, giving me a chance to do different voices and characters. And
really
like
lean
that.
Into it.
Yeah.
Lean into the performance.
Yeah.
And this probably came easy for you because in recent years, you've made your living mostly as a voice actress.
Yes, yes.
Do we say actress anymore? Are we not supposed to say that? Do I say actor? What do I say?
Well, there's no supposed to. I don't care.
You don't care?
Yeah,
okay.
I don't care.
You don't mind actress?
No, I don't mind it.
Okay.
Even though it has a terrible connotation. Anyway.
So I say actor.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too.
All right, I'll say that. So let me ask you about this. You're a well-known commodity from being in the business for this long. Do you still have to audition for these voice acting jobs, or do they just say, get me Lorraine Newman?
It's both.
Okay.
And, you know, auditions are in place for everybody. People much more famous and accomplished than I am, some of them still have to audition.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much choice now. So, but yeah, I still audition for voiceover all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And other than the hair and makeup, when you get a voice job, is it the same preparation that you do?
Well, you don't have to memorize, but it's almost like marking up music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There is a music to the work, and because it is an instrument that you're working with, a singular instrument that you're working with, you can go through a script and just mark, you know, how you're going to emphasize this and choose the character. Maybe I'll go against type. It's a hippopotamus. She should sound like Marilyn Monroe. And, you know, it's stuff like that. So it is that kind of preparation. Mm-hmm. But nothing really more than that.
And who decides that? Like, if they send you a picture of an animated penguin and they want you to play that part, do you decide what the voice is going to be?
Yeah, I will submit it. And again, in a context like that, it will be an audition, and they'll get, you know, hundreds of them, and everybody went for the type of the physical type of the hippopotamus. But the people who go against type, they stand out more, you know. So yeah, sometimes that wins.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you have hundreds of credits. I mean, Pixar films. I just wrote down a few of the Pixar films. And now I've lost the page, but Wall-E.
Go to IMDb.
Yeah, IMDb. Just,
I can't even remember all I've done.
Up, Wall-E, Monsters, Inc., just a few. But it's amazing to be involved in, those are like quality productions. I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
And when you're in there doing a scene, are the other actors there with you sometimes, or is it just you with someone just reading the part that isn't part of the cast?
Well, you know, I'm not in the echelon that does featured voices. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of in a loop group, but they can be anywhere from 12 people to 4 people, or just me.
Okay.
Because they've got some characters that they haven't gotten a voice for. So, but if it's a big group, you're trying out for that voice in the session.
Yeah.
But working for Pixar was great. When we did Monsters, Inc., they had just gotten the technology to make it look like the sun is filtering through the water, you know, and it was so exciting because it was, I mean, who knew that was something that was difficult to do, you know, but we got to get a real insight into that whole process.
And would you prefer to be in the room with the other actors? Is it easier that way?
Well, it's more fun, especially if you're in a show like, well, all the shows I've done, like As Told by Ginger and The Croods, Hysteria, more recently Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, we were all in a room together, and it's like a radio play, and
right,
that is so much fun, and it is a thing of the past because of COVID.
You would think that, yeah, you would think that, well, it'll come back, but I would think that that would be more, you're getting a better read from all the actors if you're all in there playing off.
Absolutely, yeah, it is a performance. It's more of a performance.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, you're in Pensacon right now, mm-hmm, but last month, you were at SF Sketchfest.
Right.
And there was a tribute to Lorraine Newman.
Yeah, there was.
Tell us about, who was involved in that? Fred Armisen, Dana Gould, Phil Lamar. What was that like to have people just coming to pay tribute to you and your work?
Well, I said to Dana Gould, and he thoroughly understood me. I said, this is going to make me feel good about myself for at least a day. But it was great. You know, they had these recorded messages that I didn't even know.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so it was Paul Rubens, who I've been friends with for 50 years. And, you know, my kids did messages. Spike said, hey, happy 100th birthday, Mom. You know, it's just... And Hannah, you know, recorded a message from her dressing room. And she was like, you know, you've been such an influence on me. Look at this, you know. And... oh, God, Wendy McClendon Covey and Alan Zweibel, and I can't remember all the people, Jane Curtin. So it was really great, and I had, like, my animation reel and my on-camera reel.
Nice.
Where you can really just select the highlights. And, you know, it was a revelation for some people because they didn't remember stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's always as great to hear the audience go, oh, you know.
And then maybe go back and find those things that they didn't remember or haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Are you an emotional person? Were there tears? Did it bring you to tears?
I didn't cry. But I am an emotional person when I'm at home alone watching a Hallmark commercial. But, you know, or anything, actually. I cry really easily at home by myself. But no, I did not cry.
All right. They were probably trying to make you cry, Lorraine. You probably let them down.
Oh, sorry.
I want to talk about, you just brought up Hannah again and from her dressing room. The woman that plays her mom on Hacks, I think
oh,
her name is
God.
Ava Daniels.
Yeah. What is that? A Jane? Does somebody know Jane? Jane? Oh, God, is she funny. I've seen her in so many things.
Jane Addams. Jane Addams plays Ava Daniels. Okay.
Her style is so unique, mm-hmm. and I've seen her. Do you remember that show Claws with Niecy Nash? She had a whole story arc where she kidnapped, I can't remember the character's name, but that really tall, handsome guy, and kept him as a prisoner. But, I mean, she's so different and so great.
Well, my question is, were you considered to play Hannah's mom in Hacks?
No. I really don't work on camera if I can help it.
And why is that?
Because I just it's harder for me to memorize now. It's like, I guess you didn't expect to hear the word flaccid today, but it's like the muscle for memorizing is flaccid.
Okay.
And I'm 71, and it's just, I'm not used to it. I also have a lot of stage fright. You know, and I've heard about that happening to actors before, where as time went on, they developed more and more stage fright.
Okay.
And that's what's happened to me. Even if I can't audition at all. So if I worked on camera, I just did an episode of Ghosts recently, but it was because they just offered it to me. And again, it's like, I'll look at it and go, oh, okay, I know how to do this. But if I get an offer for something else and I don't think I know how to do it, I say, I'm not right for it.
All right. So stage fright as a performer, you're not stage fright to be here as
yes,
yourself.
Yes, I am. I've taken a beta blocker. I'm just
Is that why you went to the bathroom before coming out here?
Yes, and I prayed. So.
But you're being yourself.
I know. That's the scary part. Who's that?
That would be tough.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable in my own skin, so I don't really get nervous. I mean, I was a little nervous because I was going to meet you. But because here's the thing, Saturday Night Live came on October 1975.
Right.
I was 11.
Okay.
But I remember I was watching it because my parents would go to sleep and I would come down and I'm like, what's this? What's this show? And I knew I wasn't supposed to be watching it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
There were sketches that I knew I wasn't supposed to be seeing.
Uh-huh.
But still, I never
and you got
watching.
It? You got the stuff?
I probably not. I probably didn't. But I knew, like, that seems maybe risque.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to
something.
Think if we did anything risque.
Well, I'll tell you, one of your...
Uncle Roy. God.
Well, Uncle... Okay. Now, see, that's the thing about Saturday Night Live. By the time Buck Henry came on, maybe I was 12. A 12-year-old doesn't know who Buck Henry is.
Right. Absolutely.
And yet, after his first appearance on Saturday Night Live, I'm like...
It's another
this guy's great. Like, I didn't know he wrote The Graduate at that point. I just thought, here's this funny older gentleman that comes on.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that was what was great about the show. You would introduce us to people that we didn't know at my age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joe Clayburgh, I don't know who that is. You know, Candace Bergen, what? But that's what I just loved about the show. I saw all these people that I never saw before. And then they became, you know, embedded in my head.
Well, also, they don't do this anymore, and much to my dismay, but we used to break musical acts, people that no one had seen before.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I don't know how well-known Elvis Costello was when he was on our show, or Devo. I don't think anybody knew who Devo was. Gil Scott-Heron, you know, all these great, great people that, you know, some of them I'd never heard of, mm-hmm. some I had, and I was like, I'm not starstruck with actors, but with musicians.
With musicians. And you've dated a few.
I have.
Is it okay to say that you lost your virginity to one?
I
guess it wasn't okay to say it.
The thing about doing a book on tape is no one can see me. So I can talk about things like that, but like with people seeing me, I don't know that I...
So we should put like a blind, so you
yeah.
just go like this. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, so I won't say the name. You can listen to the book and all that kind of stuff. But you did date, you dated Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo mm-hmm. for many years.
Yeah.
And Devo was one of the acts that broke on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And you also have a song written for you by Andrew Gold.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't know him, his biggest hits were Thank You for Being a Friend and Lonely Boy. But the song that he wrote, and I have to look at the title because I just dropped it. But you tell us. What's
Never Let Her Slip Away.
Never Let Her Slip Away. And you did slip away.
I did slip away. Mm. Yeah.
I talked to my baby on the telephone long distance. I never would have guessed I could miss someone so bad. Yeah. I really only met about a week ago, but it doesn't seem to matter to my heart. I know that I love her. I'm hoping that I never recover. 'Cause she's good for me, and it would really make me happy to never let her slip away.
What's it like to have a song written by? I mean, you're like up there with Sharona and
who is now a real estate agent, by the way.
Right. Yes.
I just found that out the other day.
Yes, she's a pretty successful real estate agent. And yeah. Roseanne Arquette is from the Toto song.
Yeah. So, and Peter Gabriel, Your Eyes.
That's right. Yeah. And Lorraine Newman.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think Never Let Her Slip Away was as huge of a hit. As,
top five in the UK.
It was?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I did a little research.
Wow. Well, that's so nice.
How about that?
Yeah.
Was that song written before you got away or?
No, we were together when he wrote it.
And does Andrew, and we say here on my show, we say rock and peace. So rock and peace, Andrew, because he's no longer with us. But did he present it to you in you know, recorded form, or did he play it for you on acoustic guitar the first time you heard it? And this is a very personal question. You
he
don't have
played
to
it for me in the studio, actually.
All right.
And the hand clapping in mm-hmm. it, Don Henley was doing that.
Nice.
And then you heard it in one of their songs. I'm trying to think of
is
which
is it Heartache Tonight?
Yeah, Heartache Tonight, yeah. Yeah.
Like that, yeah. Wow. Very cool. And I think it had there's some famous people on background vocals on that song, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think Timothy B. Schmidt.
Oh, really?
Somewhere I read that Freddie Mercury, uncredited, is doing some background vocals on that song.
On Heartache Tonight?
No, on your song.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. We're learning today, Lorraine.
I can't... Are you... You heard that, right?
There's no
proof.
And unless you can hear him on the song.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
God.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hey, folks. Pat Francis here from the Rock Solid Podcast. I want to talk to you a little bit about U-Turn Audio. Let me tell you something. I own a couple of these Orbit turntables. Brilliant sound, simple design, pure analog experience. They come in a multitude of colors. They look cool. They sound even better. You got to get one of these. And you know what? If you want to make your listening experience even better, I recommend plugging in a pair of their Ethos powered speakers. Look, the turntable has a built-in preamp. All you do is plug these things in, turn them on, drop the needle, and go. old school analog power that fits on your bookshelf. Ultra low distortion, amplification meets classic speaker design. We are talking about Ethos, high fidelity stereo speakers that deliver immersive analog sound. The link is in the description, but it's easy. uturnaudio.com.
Now back to the show.
Well, that's cool, though. What was it like when a big artist would be on Saturday Night Live? Like the week that the Stones are on, is it just a buzz? Is it a party all week long?
It's, God, how do I describe it? It's less than zero. It's,
ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling
You know, nobody slept. The Stones had their doctor who had pharmaceutical cocaine. And I loved cocaine, you know, so it was like really nice. But everybody, I remember being in like this trailer set for a sketch of Backstage or something. Okay. And I'm in there with Charlie Watts. And he asks me a question, and I answer it, and he goes like this. And then he asked me the same question again. And he did it three times, and I thought, he doesn't want to talk to me. But, you know, I had asked Mick and Keith about their first song that I heard, which is It's All Over Now, mm-hmm. and that guitar break that Keith does. You know, I didn't know who Chuck Berry was. I was a little too young for that. And so I said, this is probably a stupid question. And, you know, Mick said, don't put yourself down like that. You know, it's fine, anything you want to say. You know, it was like he'd been in therapy,
right.
You know. And he said, yeah, Chuck Berry all the way. Yeah.
Well, baby used to stay out all night long. She made me cry. She done me wrong. She hurt my eyes open. That's no lie. Because I used to love her, but it's all
and you, but of course you were in it because you were in your 20s and you're meeting, you're talking to the Rolling Stones. Are you nervous, like, just talking with these people that would come on the show?
You know, I don't remember being nervous. The only person I was really nervous to talk to was David Bowie. Let's just spool back to middle school. My best friend is a guy named Tony Sales. He was Soupy Sales' son.
And then he went on to play with David in Tin Machine.
In Tin Machine, he was like in his band. Also, the very, very beginning of the Groundlings, there was a guy in our company named Joey Arias, who is now an extremely famous drag queen.
Okay.
But he and Klaus Nomi were the backup singers on the show. And Joey told me this story because I remember David Bowie hugging me, but I don't remember why. And he said, let's play a trick on Lorraine, you know? And that's what it was he came up and hugged me.
He hugged you as a trick?
Here's what it was. I had promised Joey tickets for the show to attend. I didn't know he was in the band. So, and I forgot that I had promised them, and I gave them to someone else, and I felt so terrible. And so, you know, Bowie comes up to me and says, you didn't save tickets for Joey. So I got him in anyway. It's in the bands, you know. So.
I remember that performance with Klaus Nomi because he just I never saw him before either. And you're like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
What's going on here? But that was Bowie.
He always
wanted you to look and
always
wonder
ahead
why.
Of his time.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When Elvis Costello stopped playing Less Than Zero and went into Radio, was Lorne pissed off?
Well, if standing off camera, but right in front of Elvis Costello and doing this is pissed off, I have to say yes.
All right. And yet, Saturday Night Live is like a rock and roll show. The whole aspect of the show is rock and roll.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the comedy, of course, rock and roll comedy. And so the most rock and roll thing you could do would be to stop your song in the middle and play another song. And so, but instead of embracing it, Lorne had to kind of toe the corporate line a little bit, too.
Well, but the thing about a live show is it's timed to the second.
True. You're right.
So if you take longer, then something has to be cut, and you can't cut the commercials.
Okay.
So, you know, that's why he was so angry.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Lorne.
God damn it.
Once again, here's Elvis Costello.
Calling Mr. Oswald with the swastika tattoo. There is a vacancy waiting.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, there's no reason to do this song here.
Radio. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I was tuning in the shine of the light, not dialed, doing anything my radio advised. We
ever one of those late night stations playing songs bringing tears to my eyes. I was seriously thinking about adding the receiver when the switch broke, cause it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is a sad salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason.
What, now I ask Mike Ensley to ask you some of your top three performers on the show. And you did say Devo, and you did say Elvis Costello. And the other one was, for me, a really out there choice, and it was Ry Cooder. Tell me why you chose Ry Cooder. Because, like, of all the people I can think of that have performed on there, one of my favorites is when Bette Midler sang the Tom Waits song, Martha.
Once again, Bette Midler.
You made me feel awful good. Thank you. My friend Tom Waits wrote this song. Operator number, please. It's been so many years. Will he remember my voice while I fight the tears? Hello, hello, there is this Tommy. This is Betsy Frost, and I am calling long distance. Don't worry about the cost. It's been 20 years or more now. Won't you please recall and meet me out for coffee? We can talk about it all. Oh, those were days of roses.
Do you remember that?
No.
Oh my God!
She did that when I was on.
Oh,
I don't
seemed
think she
like it was early on
in the 70s.
No, well, you but should go look at it.
I do remember the 70s, okay. Oddly enough, because I this is the curse, is that I never drank. I never liked alcohol, so I never drank. So I remember way more than I want to.
All right.
But.
So Ry Cooder.
Yeah, but David Bowie too. But Ry Cooder, I love blues. Mm. I absolutely love it. And growing up in L.A., you could see everybody. I saw, do you know that movie Cadillac Records? Did anybody see that with Adrian Brody?
I have not seen Cadillac Records, no.
Well, I mean, it's Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Willie Dixon and, you know, all these, you know, I would see Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, all these blues people, I saw them at the Ash Grove. So I was familiar with Ry Cooder as one of the greatest blues musicians.
Whenever you find a man that loves every woman he sees, there's always some kind of woman that's putting him up a tree. Now that kind of man he ain't got as much sense as a mute. You know everyone don't love you, they're just a playing you for a fool.
I named my dog after him. And when I was hiking one day in Tree People Park in LA, I passed this guy and I thought, God, he looks like Taj Mahal. But, you know, Taj Mahal hiking is such a yuppie activity. It would be like seeing Eminem at a wine tasting in Napa, you know. So, but then I came back the other way and there he was again. And I said, I'm sorry, but you look so much like Taj Mahal. And he said, that's right. And I said, you know, my dog's name is Ry Cooder. He said, I'm going to tell that boy, you know.
Oh, I am digging the voices today, Lorraine. Thank you so much for doing those voices. When you were cast on Saturday Night Live, 22 years old?
23.
23. What was the audition process like?
Well, nobody likes to hear this because the audition process now is like a salmon run. But I was in the Groundlings, mm-hmm. and Lorne Michaels was producing a Lily Tomlin special.
Yes.
So he and Lily came to see the show, and they hired me for that show.
For the Lily Tomlin
yeah,
special.
Yeah, and okay. I was 22 then. That's what people mix up.
All right.
And then, and I didn't know they were in the audience. And then Lorne came back because he was doing SNL, didn't know he was in the audience, and I had new material and new characters, and he said, meet me at the Chateau Marmont, you know, and pitched this show, which is like a cross between Monty Python and 60 Minutes. Well, Monty Python had not been on TV in LA at that time,
yeah.
so I didn't know who that was. But I was like, 60 Minutes, Monty Python, weird, I'd watch that, you know. And he said, it'll be only for 13 weeks with a 5-year option. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, that'll ever happen. And so I didn't really audition. You know, I didn't know I was auditioning.
Right. But you were hired because of your talent, of course. You know. So even though you didn't know you were auditioning.
Right. Right.
You had a great audition.
I guess I did. Yeah.
What was the order of the... Do you remember were you the first woman to be cast?
I think Danny was cast and Gilda was cast and we watched Jane's audition.
Okay.
And Belushi had to audition because of the network being receptive to him. And okay. Gilda was like, shave your beard, you know? And he did, and, you know, he did The Samurai, and I can't remember what else he did, but, yeah, he was cast. And Bill Murray auditioned at that time, mm-hmm. but we already had Chevy. And so when Chevy left, that's when Billy came in.
Gotcha. For me, like, everyone always talks about Belushi and Chevy, but for me, it was always Dan Aykroyd on the
me
show.
Too.
Just
me too.
There was just, like, something dangerous about everything he did. Like, I never knew who's this guy's crazy, is what I always thought when I would watch it.
New Shimmer is a floor wax.
No, New Shimmer is a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax.
It's a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax, I'm telling
you. It's a dessert topping, you cow.
Hey, calm down, you two. New Shimmer's a floor wax and a dessert topping. Here, I'll spray some on your mop and some on your butterscotch pudding. Tastes terrific.
And just look at that shine.
Hey, outlasts every other leading floor wax 2-1. It's durable and it's scuff resistant. And it's delicious. Sure is. Perks up anything from an ice cream sundae to a pumpkin pie.
Made from an exclusive non-yellowing formula.
I haven't even touched my pudding and I'm ready for more.
Such an original mind.
Yeah.
You know, for me too. And he was really the only cast member that wrote. Gilda collaborated with Alan Zweibel, mm-hmm. but Danny really wrote stuff. And, you know, Ghostbusters is a perfect example of his, you know,
his
thinking.
Mind,
in
right.
fact, I was at dinner with him a couple years ago, and we were in upstate New York, and a town next to us called Lilyvale or something like that, it is a town of psychics. And his grandfather was one of, like, the founding members of the community. And he said that was partly what gave him the idea for Ghostbusters. You know, I mean, it's just a really interesting family and just Danny's whole perspective. I mean, Coneheads, it's just all yeah. him.
How did they get the senso rings past the censors?
I don't know.
I mean, that seems like an absolute no to
I know.
Me if you're
it
a censor.
It really does. There's no two ways about it.
No, there's not.
I have no idea.
When they made the Conehead movie, you were not cast as Connie Conehead.
Well, I was too old.
But yeah. were you? Because they were aliens. So I think you could have still been Connie.
I thought that girl was really cute.
She was. Yeah, she was. She was.
Yeah.
She was okay.
Yeah, I had a cameo in that.
You did, as the aunt.
The aunt, yes.
But were you disappointed that you weren't cast as Connie, or were you just like, well...
I didn't imagine that I would be cast as Connie, but right. I would have liked a bigger part. I'll admit that, you know.
Well, in 2015, you guys did some State Farm advertisements as the Coneheads.
I know. That was fun.
How did someone in State Farm decide that, let's get these characters from 30 years ago and put them in a State Farm
commercial? Who knows?
I know. It seems like an odd choice. I'm glad it happened. But yeah. It seems like an odd choice.
Yeah, well, you know, the creatives in advertising are really something.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of like the Super Bowl ads, there is someone at that advertising agency that comes up with this stuff. You know, the Geico cavemen and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And what's that? You know, it's a real art writing for advertising.
When Aykroyd would play Irwin Mainway, and you would be
Christy Christina,
with the big fake boobs.
Right.
And then the fake nipples.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
how do you like that?
Yeah. And you're like, how do you describe that character? A ditzy sex pot?
A bimbo.
A bimbo. Okay.
You know, kind of, it was kind of the Ed McMahon to his Johnny Carson. You know, I honestly hate to say it, but I never liked that character.
Okay. I can understand
I don't know why people thought it was funny. I never got it, you know, but
I mean, I did for different reasons as a 13-year-old,
sure,
but
sure. Yeah.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But what were some of your favorite characters that you played?
I loved doing Lena Wertmuller.
Yes.
I loved doing the Valley Girl. But I loved doing all sorts of different characters, you know, Indira Gandhi and, you know, Anna Freud, Katharine Hepburn. I can't remember. It's been a long time. One of my favorite sketches is the Beatnik sketch, and everybody's in it. And it was, I think, the second time Steve Martin hosted.
Okay.
And I was Isadora Schwartz, a modern dancer, you know. And I come out, and I can't do this anymore because of my aged shoulders, but literally this with my hands over here. And I'm a poet, is like, I am a leaf tossed on the wind. You know, I love that. I love that sketch in general. You should look it up. It is so good. It's long, but it's good.
Steve Martin hosted so many times that people, I think, at times thought he was a cast member.
Mm-hmm.
Was the first time he came in, did he immediately gel with the whole, the vibe of the show, how it worked, the cast members?
He did, which was great, because before he came on, the guys were kind of grumbling, you know, like, he's a stand-up, he won't be good, he works alone, you know, and of course he disproved that.
Yes, many times over. If I were to just say each original Not Ready for Primetime player's name, could you give me one word about each one of them? Or would you even want to?
I don't know if I would want to. I think they warrant a lot more words than one.
All right, that's good. That's a good answer. We'll pass. Do you still watch the show? Because I still do.
I do. I love sketch comedy.
I love it too. And I get so angry. Like, it's a transitional year this year.
Yes.
And but it's still making me laugh. And I get so mad when people are like, ugh, that new cast. I'm like, come on.
Yeah,
everyone was always a new cast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I say this because, you know, people say, you were in the best cast. And I say, you know, the best cast was the cast that was on when you were an adolescent.
Right.
Because that's a meaningful time in your life. And there have always been good people.
Yeah.
Always. So, you know, the talent just keeps evolving and the style of performance and the, you know, idiosyncratic writing, it just keeps evolving, and mm-hmm. I love it.
Do you think Lorne is ever going to leave that show? He left for a time.
I don't think he would leave, and I think that he really wants to make that 50-year mark.
Yeah.
You know, I think the last 2 years, the writing has not been great.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, they'll have a really solid show.
Yeah.
But the writing has, I don't know. But I think that'll... it'll pick up. You know, Sarah Sherman is a friend of both my kids.
Oh, she's crazy.
And I used to see
crazy
her.
Crazy in a good way. Is
she's
what I mean.
Great.
Yeah.
She's great. But I used to see her early on doing stand-up. And it's so gratifying because they draw a lot from the Groundlings. Mm-hmm. And again, I've seen those kids, you know, develop at the Groundlings and then go on to do that show. And it's just, it's so gratifying.
For someone who doesn't know, the Groundlings versus Second City, what are the differences or the similarities?
I think that Second City is more premise-based, and the Groundlings is more character-driven. You can always tell a Groundling if you know, if you're calibrated to see their style, you know.
Mm. Do you ever take, you probably don't do this, but do you ever step back and just think of all the famous people who have come out of that show that you started?
I was there.
You were there. But you influenced all these people. Like, I just made like a quick list of people that we might not know about. We might not know about Will Ferrell or Eddie Murphy or Kristen Wiig or Mike Myers, Sherry O'Terry, Bill Hader, because they wouldn't have had an outlet maybe to get out there and become what they've become. They would just be, you know, trying to do it. But with this show, propelled these people who were talented to get on the show, first of all, to these great heights. Molly Shannon, Tina Fey, Jason Sudeikis. I mean,
I think you have Lorne to thank for that. Because again, he was always a champion of maybe not, you know, like he was always a champion of women's humor at a time when that was not common.
Right.
And I think he always appreciated, this is what I've observed about SNL. You know, you had Carol Burnett and Laugh-In, both really good shows, but they were written by older people. So I would say that our show was the first alternative comedy show that was ever on. And I think that's significant. And I think that every actor that has been on that show has been in the style of alternative comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
But alternative comedy without Saturday Night Live would not have that much of an outlet, you know what I mean? To the public, to the world.
Impossible to say.
Speaking of Tina Fey, if Lorne reaches the 50-year mark, and then, I mean, when he reaches the 50-year mark, and then if he decides, that's it for me, I always thought Tina Fey would be a great successor for that
job. She would, yeah.
So.
I mean, Steve Higgins is also...
He's been around for a long time, too.
Yeah, and Jim Downey keeps coming back.
Yeah.
He was our head writer for a while, and then he comes back and forth and becomes head writer again. He's so fantastic.
And that's it's when you're older, it's hard to stay in tune with what is funny in the present.
Unless you keep watching new stuff.
Right, and reading and learning. Because you have to keep evolving.
Yes.
As the comedy writer, maybe more so than the performer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask about the Blues Brothers.
Okay.
When Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi present the Blues Brothers in, I don't know, in the, what
is it? It was like in warm-up.
Okay. Were they dead on serious about the Blues Brothers, or were they playing it the first time as parody? Like I feel like they were serious about it. Like, hey, this is
definitely serious about it. And you know, like rock stars want to be comedians, and comedians want to be rock stars. I think, especially for John, this was like a fantasy. And Danny liked the blues too, but I think he approached it more as a performance.
Yeah.
You know.
Again.
Ball, ball, ball. Have you ever heard of a wish sandwich? A wish sandwich is the kind of a sandwich where you have two slices of bread and you... wish you had some meat, ball, ball, ball. on a hill on a hill of one.
But then they got to have this band that was like, you know, Steve Cropper and
Duck Dunn.
Duck Dunn. I mean, the guys that were on all the stacks.
Yep.
You know, Isaac Hayes, Sam and Dave, you know, all, I mean.
Lou Marini, all the horn players.
Yes,
just crazy.
It was just so amazing.
But yeah, I always thought, I go, these, and I didn't know blues music as a kid. Mm-hmm. I'm introduced to blues music from these two guys,
oh
from the Blues
God.
Brothers. Yeah.
Oh God.
I know, not the way to be introduced
no,
to it.
No, it's still
fun.
Their
it's
their selection of songs was
yeah,
good.
Yeah, was good. All right, Lorraine, we are finished.
We are finished. Okay.
Was this painless?
It was painless. It
okay,
was fun.
Good. You're gonna go enjoy that cookie?
I for sure I am.
All right.
Darn tootin'.
Let me tell
you. Thank you all for coming.
Yes, thank you folks for being here. You can find Lorraine on Twitter at Lorraine Newman and Instagram at Lorraine Newman.
Yes.
Okay. Take care, guys. Thank you, Lorraine.
Thank you.
I wish his girlfriend were dead.